cognitive reframing. It's a fancy phrase for changing your thinking about something. One of my favorite scenes from any movie is We Were Soldiers Once, and it's based on the true account of Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore, played by Mel Gibson. And Colonel Moore is leading an army battalion in Vietnam, and they're surrounded and outnumbered by an enemy. I mean, really surrounded, like 4,000 to 400. And at one point, it looks dire, and a soldier comes running up to Colonel Moore, eyes big as plates, and says, "We're being overrun." And Moore says, "Nah, boys, we're going to win this fight." And the panic would have spread, but the confidence spread instead. That's cognitive reframing. It's not making up something that's not real or true. It's seeing what is real or true about a situation by looking at it differently, more accurately, more holistically. We've been doing that this morning. One of the reasons that God commands us to worship is because it's just so good for us. It reframes reality to what it really is. Sometimes what we're thinking or believing is just not true, but sometimes it's just partially true. And the part that's missing is crucial to healthy thinking and living. And it often takes outside help to think well, especially if we're really stuck. Now, parents do cognitive reframing all the time. So here, for instance, your child comes home, first grader, "I hate school, no one likes me, my teacher's mean, I'm never going again," after a single bad day. And the wise parent doesn't say, "Well, you know, I get it, school's pretty terrible, and I don't doubt people dislike you, you're a pain sometimes. And then let me tell you about your teacher. You don't know half the story." So that would be a bad idea for a parent. But what the parent does is, "Well, what about Amy? I thought you liked playing with her. Remember your teacher gave you a note where she was proud of you. What do you like about school?" Our thoughts run down a track like a train, and if those tracks are wrong, they need a switch to divert us down a different track. Proverbs, all of wisdom literature in the Bible, is cognitive reframing in epic form. But its purpose is not just merely cognitive or mental shifts. Its purpose is worship, life shifts. The purpose in wisdom is that we become people who lead God-honoring and God-enjoying lives. Wisdom comes from God, and wisdom directs our hearts and lives to God. So we can look at a world or a situation and see what's really there, accurately see what's there. This person is sick, lying there in pain. That's terrible. That's accurate. This teacher, right, Claire, is trying to quiet down a noisy classroom. Again, that's a bummer. This student is studying math. Boring, at least for me, that would be boring. Politicians in Washington are fighting again. Ridiculous. All that's true, but is that all that's true? We can look again. We can reframe it and see what's really happening. This person's experiencing God even in illness. Eternity's at work here, right here in this hospital bed. God is pleased with the way that teacher is loving students. The student at university studying math as she seeks to follow the life God has for her. At that moment, study is worship. Politicians are fighting, but God holds the hearts of kings in his hands. His purposes will stand. He's at work here. So wisdom is reframing or framing our thinking to align with all the reality of God, to see all that's there. Colonel Moore didn't deny that they were outnumbered or surrounded. It was a desperate situation. But he was able to say something to cast vision, because he knew more than what the young soldier knew about the situation. He had past combat experience in another war. He knew of the superior air support that would give them the advantage. He knew all the young soldier knew, and that was accurate, but he knew more. He knew the fuller picture. So he could reframe it to better align with all that was really true. Nah, boys, we're going to win this fight. And so we're going to go to God's wisdom in Proverbs and get our minds once again back on the right track, or keep them on track. And how we're approaching the book, the first February and March, we're going through the first nine chapters by chapter. That's how Proverbs is written. The first nine chapters are written to be read and applied just chapter by chapter. And then we're going to operate like Proverbs is written after that for the rest of the year. We're going to go topic by topic. Now, we're going to listen to chapter 2 being read, and because I want you to absorb it. And a couple of things to keep in mind as James comes and reads. This is written, Proverbs is written, at least these first chapters, as a father to a younger son. And so put yourself as the listener into the role of that person. What principles apply to you, even if you're a woman or an older man? And what you want to do is hear wisdom personified as your father is speaking to you. So put yourself in that mindset. And then second thing to remember as you listen, there were no verses in the original Hebrew. They were added later to assist in study and reference. And this particular chapter in Hebrew is one long, complex sentence. So it's written to be and James will take some breaths, but it's written to be heard as your Father speaking breathlessly, passionately to you. It's important you understand that, because He's not just the Father giving us some, go be nice, go be smart, don't make bad choices. This is like, stay alive, live with purpose, steer clear of disaster. So do your best as the hearer to not just, okay, someone's reading something to me so I can think about something else. Come on up, James. Do your best to hear from those perspectives. A call to become passionate about the pursuit of wisdom, because passionate pursuit of wisdom is passionate pursuit of God. And there's no direct advice in terms of specifics given in this chapter. Other places you'll see, do this, don't do that. You don't find that here. The actual content of wisdom is only given indirectly. This is more of an impassioned plea to pursue wisdom. It's the cry of the Father's heart to His daughter, His son. And you see this in the first four verses. Look at some key words here. If, this is one big long conditional sentence, if, and then there's a bunch of thens. If you grasp and store up, very proactive language, bending your ear, extending your heart's going out to grab this. If you call out for understanding, if you shout for competence, if you seek it like silver, search for it like hidden treasure, do you get the sense of proactivity here? There is this desperation for wisdom. I've read Proverbs casually for decades, and that's been my error. Even more so, I've been casual about the pursuit of wisdom overall, unless I think I really need it for some pressing issue or difficulty. I become very passionate then. Oh God, give me wisdom. Oh God, what do I do here? And then when the pressure's off, my tendency has been to turn my passionate pursuit of wisdom and God into the equivalent of a casual walk on the beach. And there's no wisdom in this. So we're being called to live in an ongoing passionate pursuit of wisdom. Whether you feel like it or not, the need is always there. Our need for wisdom is always desperate. And also the ongoing threat of not pursuing wisdom, walking off the path into folly, that threat is always there as well. Jim Lewis told me that when he was deployed to Korea, he would see airmen do really well for almost a year. Year-long deployment. And then at the very end, they had a term for it. A term doesn't make any sense to me, so I won't even describe it. They had a term for it. At the very end, like a week to go, friends would go out, and they would celebrate having finished and do foolish things at the very end. They would let down their guard. So 51 weeks of doing well and then 1 week of messing up. And he said, I've seen it more than once, Terry, where military members are on the plane, buckled in, ready to return home, and military police go on and take them off the plane. So it's a dramatic example of our desperate need for wisdom to not let down our guard, to keep the threat level high. Look at verse 2, where the ear and the heart are poetically tied together. We listen with our ears, the eardrums vibrate, but the heart is where we go out and grab wisdom. The heart in the Bible stands for the whole you. It's the real thinking, choosing, feeling you. And so the whole flow of these opening verses are urging us to run after wisdom. Nothing casual, passive, nonchalant here. I had a friend come up to me, a young friend, in between the services and said, now we're probably going to get to this later on, but what does it mean practically to be passionate about wisdom? I said, right here, you're standing here asking me what does it mean to be passionate about wisdom? It's that kind of thing. And it's going after it, not waiting for it to come to you. Verse 5, then you'll understand the fear of Yahweh. You'll find the knowledge of God, for Yahweh bestows wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. Some translations use Lord, usually in all caps, instead of Yahweh. Because in the Hebrew, Yahweh is the personal holy name of God. There was a fancy name for it. It's called the Tetragrammaton, which means there was only four consonants, no vowels, and it stood for God's personal name. It was written but not spoken. And so the reason I bring this up, why it's so important, is we're not just dealing with wise tidbits for life, nice people getting nicer. We're dealing with the holy God. He is the source of all wisdom. The reason we started this morning like we did in worship was to build to this point to where we see this is not just Ben Franklin's tidbits for being smart. This is, we pursue wisdom because wisdom is pursuing God. And God has condescended to give us access to some of His wisdom so we can become like Him. So look at this big conditional clause. If we passionately pursue wisdom, which is the same as pursuing God, then we will know wisdom and we will know God. So you see why this year of wisdom is so important. To seek wisdom is not different than seeking God. It's a fine-tuned, zeroed-in way of seeking God. To seek wisdom is to seek God. To know wisdom is to know God. Then look at verses 9 to 15. And remember, this is one long speech. So when verse 9 begins with another then, it's all tied back to that original if. If, then. If we passionately pursue God and His wisdom, then we'll embrace ethics. It's going to change our life. Righteousness, justice, and integrity will become people who love the good path. For wisdom will penetrate your heart. That's changing us from the inside out. And knowledge will become attractive to us. That's a description of transformation. Doing what wisdom does and then becoming what wisdom is. Wisdom is changing us from the inside out. Everyone does what makes sense to them. When facing decisions, we do the math. And if it's a decision of what to do or say right now, we do the math very quickly. But if it's a bigger decision, we do the math maybe a little bit longer. But we do the math. We weigh the costs. What are the risks? What are the benefits? And you may not have a spreadsheet in your mind or in your life, but you do that. We all do that. This is talking about becoming wise, where we don't just ask, what are the costs? What are the risks? What are the benefits? But we're asking ourselves a different set of questions. We start becoming a person who is living out of our being, not just our doing. So who am I? I'm a child of God. I'm a follower of Christ. What is this situation? There's lots going on here, but God's at work here. What is someone like me, child of God, do in this situation? Do you see the difference? It's no longer just a simple cost-benefit analysis, but it's asking, who am I? And what is someone like me, a follower of Christ, what do they do in this situation? And as we become wise, wisdom starts making sense to us. It's what we want. And specifically here in these verses, there's the wisdom of looking and saying, those people are going down that path, and maybe they're the larger group of people, but that's not what I'm going to do. That's not who I am. It's not avoiding contact with people who are far from God. We're to be light to people on the dark path, but the principle here is that we don't walk in the dark as they do. We walk in the light. We are the influencer. We're not the influencees. And now, the thing is, we may live in the same house. We may work in the next desk or classroom with these people, but we walk a different path among them, even if it costs us. We do what people like us, followers of Christ, we do, wherever we are. We live in the world, not of the world. Jesus, as in all things, set the pace in this. He was the light of the world, and He walked with those who walked in darkness, but He did not walk in their darkness. So let's go on. Verse 16 to 19, this section introduces us to what will be a recurring topic in Proverbs, and it's the warnings against the wayward woman who will destroy your life. And women are not being picked on here. This was written as a father to a son. And so if you're the daughter, not the son, or if this could be the wayward man, but the idea is think of anyone or anything that takes the place or threatens to take the place of God's best in your life that will lead to ruin. And there's two Hebrew words here that are translated strange and foreign woman, and it's not that she was a foreign national living among Israel, but because she's operating outside the boundaries of the moral covenant restraints of God's people. She's not keeping her own marriage covenant commitment. She takes others down with her. She's acting as a stranger to the ways of the covenant God. In verse 18, and her house sinks down to death. That's a terrifying image. And then she's taking people down. So again, not picking on women. This is temptation personified. And her primary strategy for seducing others is her flattering speech. Later on in Proverbs, you'll see that her secondary strategy is her physical attractiveness, but flattering speech is more effective. Here's why. Your spouse, your friend, they're going to tell you hopefully what you need to hear, hopefully in a way that's winsome. They're going to tell you, but sometimes not. Why? Because they want relationship with you and they want what's best for you, and that requires honesty. Flatterers are going to speak words to draw you in so they can use you to their own ends. You are a tool to the flatterer. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. You're so wonderful. Here's how I want to use you. Satan is the ultimate flatterer. He wants to fatten us up like a Thanksgiving turkey so he can consume us. And he fattens us up our pride. You know, that doesn't apply to you. You're special. You have unique circumstances. You deserve this. Look at how hard you work. You don't deserve, she doesn't deserve you. You could do better. He doesn't appreciate you. You deserve better. You should stay bitter. You have every right to stay bitter. Look at how much you've been hurt. Your life is harder than theirs. You're not like them. Flattery is a very effective strategy to draw us into the dark path because our pride makes us especially vulnerable to this. We think much of ourselves, and so when others use flattering words, we're drawn in. That's why as we proceed, we'll see that humility is foundational for wisdom, and humble people are virtually immune to the effects of flattery. They just know better. And part of what helps you be immune to flattery is worship. It's really hard to worship like we did and then immediately start thinking more highly of yourself than you should. Look at the last three verses in chapter 2. Then you'll go on the path of good people. You'll keep on the ways of the righteous. For those with those in integrity who dwell in the land, the innocent will remain in it, but the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the faithless will be uprooted from it. And so the chapter ends with two paths, two destinations clearly in view, and two things stand out about the two paths, two destinations. One, folly and wisdom are communal paths. We talked about this already. We'll talk about it a lot more this year. And then paths have distinct destinations, so it matters which one you put your feet on. Folly and wisdom are communal paths. The good path and the bad path, foolish and the wise path, as I said last week, they're never traveled alone. People walk them in community. He who walks with the wise grows wise. The companion of fools suffers harm. Both paths are communal paths. It's arrogant to believe you can successfully navigate life by yourself, trusting yourself. 2 weeks ago, I heard a large, loud army general speak, and he looked like a character from Guardians of the Galaxy. His hands were huge. He was this tall, hulking figure. Looked like someone chiseled his face out of granite. His voice was booming in the hall, and I was thinking, I wish I wasn't in the front row. And here's the gist of what he said. Because I didn't know what this guy was going to say or do. I mean, he was kind of a terrifying guy. He said, when I was a young officer, I didn't need chaplains and room full of chaplains. I didn't think I needed anyone. So I thought. He said, now I know better. After years of difficulties in my life, I know better. Young officers, he said, they think they don't need any help, but they'll figure it out. One way or the other, they'll figure it out. I've lost track of the number of senior leaders I've heard say that exact same thing. I thought I needed no one. I was wrong. Here's what I'm looking for. Before I die, I want to hear some old guy, some old senior leader who says, I was young, confident, didn't think I needed anybody, but I listened to the old guys who told me I did. I didn't wait to figure it out. I just took their word for it. I haven't had that happen yet, but I'm hoping someday it will. Maybe one of you young guys or gals will someday be a senior leader and you'll say, I listened to this old dude named Terry one time, and I didn't figure it out on my own. I just took his word for it. That'll be wonderful if I'm still alive to see that happen. That's what wisdom's saying to us. So if you're young or old, don't think you need anyone. You're being influenced. It's how God designed us, and it's arrogant to think otherwise. So we are to pursue the influence of the godly on the good path. Again, not throwing away those on the dark path, but being the influencer, not the influencee. And that means we let the wise influence us as we walk. Humility is essential to wisdom. You can't thrive without connected community. The key is the reason why the Father's crying out to us to listen is because you tend to think you're doing fine, but you don't know till later how much better it could have been had you listened and let people influence you, wise people. And then you don't know what lies ahead, and when the path turns difficult, it's often too late to form the relationships that are deep enough to help you navigate those times. Hannah and Noah, we were talking back the week before Noah went to heaven, and you guys told me, you said it was our fault. We didn't live in connected community, and we had our family, but not connected community, and we suffered more than we needed to. And then Hannah said, this year we've been in community, and it's been transformational for our lives. So here's a friendly word for you. Part of the flattery of Satan and our own sin nature tells us, you know, they're keeping you out. They have their favorites. You're not in their circle. So they're against you. And I say flattery because this kind of thinking gives you an alibi for why you're not in connected community that doesn't relate to your own choices or fears. It's really not my fault, it's theirs. And I'm telling you, as friendly as I can, this is just not helpful and not true. You need to reframe your thinking. Dave and Lindsay Peters showed up a few years ago. They were outsiders to our church, really outside to church culture at large. And they did something that I've seen work like magic every time it's been tried. Every time. I'll tell you what it is. You ready? They showed up. They showed up. See, that's it. They showed up. But they kept showing up. They resolutely showed up. They showed up for what? Life and community. They showed up for worship, groups, parties, to help, church events. They just kept showing up. And then when they moved to California recently, the cafe was full of people they had connected with on a deep level. There was no conspiracy to keep them out, no conspiracy to get them in. They just showed up. You say, well, they're probably theologically astute, really outgoing people. Lindsay's pretty outgoing. Dave is a linesman who'd rather be up on a power line in a storm than talk to people. Neither one are theologically trained. They're not polished. You can ask them, and they're going to listen to this. They're in California. They'll hear this next week. So hi, Dave and Lindsay. They're just themselves. They connected in community because they kept showing up. And it is the responsibility of the community to reach out to people, and it's your responsibility to show up if you want to be wise. There's no conspiracy against you, and it's not complicated. It's super difficult and not complicated. You show up, you take responsibility to show up. We're not to wait for wisdom to come to us. We're not to wait for connected community to come to us. We're to go after it. And I'm going to tell you, living in connected community is super inconvenient. But it's a key part of walking a good path. And the second, these paths have distinct destinations. It matters which one you choose to travel. You say, well, that's common sense. There's no news value in that. But here's what's common, is that we think we can choose the path headed east and somehow end up west. What does that even mean? Okay, here's what I mean. You go outside and you really want to go west. I mean, the ice cream is west or whatever you really want. But the problem is the wind is blowing in my face from the west, and west is uphill. So I really want what is west, but I look and go, east has got the wind at my back and it's downhill. So I'm going to run east. Being the rational people we are, we say, I'm going to run east, and I'm going to get to the good destination west. And then we're discouraged, dismayed, and even enraged that we didn't arrive at the beautiful destination of ice cream or whatever we want. It's an illustration, but it illustrates a common tendency. I want the good destination, and I want to walk whatever path I want to walk. And often it's the path of least resistance. But paths have destination, choices have consequences. Proverbs says it matters what you do and think and believe. It matters what path you take. You choose your destination by choosing your path. The language used here in terms of destinations of the two paths, it looks a whole lot like the covenant blessings and curses delivered by God through Moses. Choose the path. Choose blessings. Choose curses. And then what followed in the Old Testament narrative we went through last year was that people chose the dark path and lost their land and were dismayed by that. God in His mercy restored them, like He will restore us, but the warnings and opportunities remain. Choose your path, choose your destination. If you want to end up in a place where you have a relationship with God and others, a place where your life has been full of meaning and impact, choose that path. You don't get to choose whether or not that path is going to be void of all suffering or difficulty, but you do get to choose which destination is going to be full of meaning and purpose and God and people. God set that before us. Now this chapter is, at the center of this chapter is a paradox. A paradox is a great word that means an apparent but not a real contradiction. A contradiction means something, two things that can't be. A paradox means two things that look like they can't be at the same time. And there's two words that make paradox. One is parallel. And the other is a word that comes from a Greek word for to seem or to appear. So two things put side by side that appear to be contradictory, but they're not. And so here's a paradox in this chapter. Wisdom is something that we must passionately and consistently pursue. We have to give full effort to it, and wisdom is a gift from God. So what do you do with a biblical paradox? You embrace both sides of the tension. So we desperately pursue it. We seek it with urgent passion. We don't wait for it to find us. We go find it. We give full effort to becoming wise. And When we find wisdom, when we become wise, we realize that wisdom has found us. If we've grown in wisdom, we give thanks to God. Growth in wisdom is growth in relationship with God. So in Proverbs 1, you find wisdom shouting out to the young man. In Proverbs 2, you find the young man shouting out to wisdom. Which is it? Well, of course, it's both. God is pursuing us. We pursue Him. We're not going to become wise if we're not passionate in the pursuit of God and His wisdom. And when we find ourselves becoming wise, we give full credit to God. So this is about a passionate, diligent, humble life. Here's how Paul describes this reality in Philippians 2. He says, continue to work out your salvation, not work for, but work out. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Give full effort to your sanctification, for it is God who works in you to will and act according to His good purpose. So we're going to respond to God. If you would join me in prayer, we're going to finish with a time for you to respond however you choose. I'll give you some ideas, but of course you can do as you feel like you are led to do. Ask God to give you passionate drive for wisdom. Ask Him to wake up your heart and soul. And then I'm going to paraphrase Proverbs 4:7. I'm going to read it first and let you think about it. And then if you dare, I'll invite you to pray it. So let me paraphrase it. Let me read it first. This is from Proverbs 4:7. God, your wisdom is supreme. I want it. I want you. Though it cost me all I have, I want understanding. That's the prayer from Proverbs 4:7. Let me say it again, and if you dare, then you can pray it. God, your wisdom is supreme. I want it. I want you. Though it cost me all I have, I want understanding. Let me pray. Father, we cry out to you for wisdom, and if we don't have passion for wisdom, we cry out to you to give us passion, to want wisdom. Just help us, please. And we recognize that life itself is going to cost us all we have. We are not going to get out of this life with our stuff, with our lives. We're not getting out alive. So make us people who really, really want to give our lives for you and for your purposes and for your wisdom. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Have a great Sunday.